Welcome to Beyond Bitcoin, a podcast about all things digital assets, the global communities they are creating, the generations that are using and investing in them, and the challenges faced by the nations that are seeking to regulate them. The content of this program is not to be taken as investment advice. The opinions expressed in the program by the host and the guests are their personal opinions only. Remember, feel free to subscribe and share with like-minded friends. My name is Derek Graham. I'm the CEO of Portal Asset Management, and my co-host is Nitin Gower, Managing Director of State Street Digital Assets. Good morning, everybody around the world, and welcome along to another episode of Beyond Bitcoin. This time, today, of course, we are transversing the world because I'm in Australia today. Nitin is in New York City, and Mark, our CIO, is in Munich in Germany. So, hello, Nitin, to you first.
Hey, Derek. Glad to be back in the US and glad to be back on the show. And looking forward, you know, with this chat with Mark, and truly a global team, I would say. All parts of the world. We cover all,
truly a global team.
All continents.
And if you look at this particular space, it just makes sense to have a team all around the world because it is so international. I mean, if everybody's in one city, my view is that they're missing out on this global culture that, you know, represents this decentralized world of digital assets. But hey, enough of that. Today, we've got Mark Witten with us. And Mark, of course, is the CIO, co-founder, along with you, Nitin, as co-founder of Portal Asset Management. And we're going to have Mark each month coming along, giving a commentary on the marketplace itself. And Mark brings to us, of course, this expertise of the discipline of macroeconomics, understanding of how funds are managed and invested, and then, of course, overlaid into this world of digital assets. Hello, Mark. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks yourself, Derek. It's good to be back. Welcome back to welcome back to the US, Nitin.
Thank you, Mark.
So, I've just looked recently at the CCI 30, and it's sitting up at about its index number of about 18,700. Its peak was about 34,000. So we're just slightly over the half peak of its all-time high of the cryptocurrency coin index 30. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of growth. We've seen a tremendous amount of growth in the market, but one has to remember it was down some 67% to 75%, depending on the index and date, when the bottom of the market there. So it's rapidly growing. The conditions have changed, haven't they, Mark, from a macroeconomic viewpoint when you know, money was very tight, interest rates were high, the positivity relating to this sector was low, so I'm talking 2022, to what it is now. So risk on assets, commodities, they've got a solid base at the moment, and they're moving forward. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the macro at the moment is quite convoluted. It's difficult to have an outright call. I think we were calling inflation and interest rates back in 2021, saying, look, inflation is sticky, it's moving, rates are going to follow, 22 is going to be a difficult year. You know, the amount of debt that's been created over the past 2 years has created quite a tightrope for the US in terms of they need to inflate their way out of the debt, but they also can't raise rates too quickly because the interest payments will kind of become untenable. So I think when we try bring this back to, or we do bring it back into crypto and say, well, where are we in the cycle? Because all markets have cycle. There's the long-term super cycles, and then there's the short-term, more rate-driven cycles. But one of the drivers of this cycle is that it's not a cyclical move. It's secular. It's a step change in both supply and demand, which is why it's been strange. We predicted, we did call, and we did position ourselves for a rally going into the end of last year, quarter four, quarter one this year. But you know, I wasn't expecting Bitcoin to go back to its all-time high with as much speed as it did. It's kind of like, you know, in general, if you look at the past events that we're, you know, that have been driving this, one being the halving, the other being the ETFs, you know, tends to kind of make an all-time high after the halving, not before. So it's just speeding up.
So let me double click on that, Mark, because I think if you look at the all-time highs, and there've been some recent predictions for it to go to 80,000, and all these breakout comes at the heels of the recent economic data, which is you know, hotter than expected north on payrolls, the entire premise around the interest rate cuts that was expected, and highlighting the U.S. economic resilience, and that's spurring a lot of risk-taking, which I think contributes a little bit of that spillover into the crypto markets. But going back to the Bitcoin pricing and price movement per se, there's a demand-supply curve. So demand curve was driven largely last year by ETF movement. As you know, has been massive demand that ETF has seen, has driven towards Bitcoin demand curve. We've seen a bunch of innovation, things like Ordinals and Layer 2, trying to add more use cases to Bitcoin ecosystem. And all these are demand side elements. And then we begin to see into the supply side, which is the halving, that, as you mentioned, Mark, where halving eventually is expected sometimes around April 20th. We are expecting to see, you know, half of the existing sort of output that we see, which is, you know, each miner, the rewarded 3.125 Bitcoin per block. So I'm just wondering, from that perspective, you know, we are seeing a massive continual growth in the supply side, but we are now beginning to see a little bit of curb in the supply side elements. We begin to see a little bit of global macro driving towards the push towards the risk taking across all asset classes. I see this as a trifecta, and love to get your perspective on what will that do, not only to Bitcoin, but eventually the spillover from Bitcoin to other asset classes.
So there's a few questions there. So the first is, traditionally there's a link between the global macro and then what's going on in the underlying real economy. And I think in some ways that link has been stretched. In some instances it feels a little bit broken, in that, you know, just the cost of living, what real estate costs now versus 30 years ago is a percentage of your income. It, you know, a house used to be, call it, three times your annual salary. Now it's like more than 10. So you've had real inflation in real assets, but also inflation in paper assets. And in terms of commodities, all the curves in terms of the cost of mining gold, the cost of supplying, all those curves have ratcheted up. Not so much on the cost of labor, as automation has created what they call this Amazonification of cost curves. It's held, labor hasn't kept up. But the inflation in raw material inputs, etc., has definitely given a bounce to commodities. I think, you know, if we take it back to, you know, to what's been happening in the space, number one, you've got a whole lot of new entrants. And as you said, you know, there's these new opportunities for Bitcoin. It's not just seen as the store of value or digital gold. There's Ordinals, BRC20s, the Layer 2s, et cetera, and they're actually generating fees. And then at the same time, you've got this massive inflow from new investors, and they're not investing in the short term. You know, I kind of spoke about it a bit with Derek yesterday, and that there's different segments of trade. There's traders that are short term and speculators. There's hedgers who manage risk. Then you have investors, but then you have long-term investors that are doing asset and liability matching, like pension funds, which weren't in the space, but they have, and insurance companies have, you know, not only billions, hundreds of billions, if not access to trillions of sovereign wealth funds. So I think that's been quite a big driver from a macro perspective, because a lot of people look at, you know, crypto, but Bitcoin, and say, well, it's just a created asset, right? It doesn't really generate cash flows, it doesn't have title to property. It's not like you own, let's say, Coca-Cola or BMW, where you own property, plant, equipment, IP, brand, all those things. It's a different asset. But what it is, being deflationary, is it's not just a store of value, but it mitigates trust. So you don't need to know who you're transacting with. And at the same time, it's decentralized, which means you own it, which is a very big change in mentality that only really started taking place in 2014, 2015, when you saw the bail-in of certain banks and not the bail-out. And that changed, and then that was exacerbated by what happened with Russia when kicked out of SWIFT, assets frozen. People started going, wait a second, you know, my money is actually not mine, particularly if it's in a bank. So I think those are all some of the drivers from a macro point of view. But the two things that stand out for me is, number one, the different participants that we're now seeing in the ecosystem, which have a much higher, I don't want to use the word pedigree, but have larger access to pools of wealth in a longer term time frame. They're not just looking to gamble and say, well, let's make a quick buck. They actually have an asset allocation decision. And then, you know, number two, the new applications that we've been seeing, which have been funneled and driven by the amount raised in the VC space, those projects, you know, there's like that lead and lag of 3, 5, 7 years where money's committed, teams develop, and then it starts coming to market. So you're going to see I believe like smart contracts are getting smarter, and Web3, and you know, what's the next wave after that? Like the applications that are coming, I don't think we are really aware of what they are, but 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, it'll be like, oh, it's like, why didn't I think of YouTube or a gaming business back in the dot-com crash? So that's why I'm starting to see, from a macro perspective, it's not just an acceptance as an asset class. It's an understanding that it's here to stay and it's becoming regulated, but also that there's so many more applications that we've yet to see that are going to drive this ecosystem. And it's just one last thing. It goes back to what Derek said. Well, the CCI 30 is, you know, not back to where it was, but yet Bitcoin is making an all-time high. It's because, well, yes, Bitcoin is still going to be the gateway, but it's the alts that are going to be driving growth in the future. That's where the next unicorns will come from.
Yeah, sure. Perfect. That's exactly why I wanted to ask this next question. And that is that, of course, traditional investors or early stage investors are using Bitcoin as an on-ramp. I often hear this discussion, well, you know, I'm really interested in Bitcoin and blockchain. And I'm thinking to myself, really? I mean, blockchain runs Bitcoin. Blockchain and smart contracts run all these things that are defined as altcoins, which is kind of derogatory, really, because they're just not Bitcoins. That's really their definition under that. What we've seen in the past is we've seen people invest in Bitcoin and start getting knowledge bases of this industry. And as these cycles have gone, we've also seen Bitcoin run first, and then altcoins follow and run harder. And I noticed this month, for the first month, we've seen a number of, we've seen the altcoin sector, we've seen this CCI 30, we've seen certainly our funds outperform Bitcoin. Do you think we're seeing the beginning of this switch across so that we're seeing, you know, Bitcoin continue to rise, but altcoins will actually rise stronger and further, Mark?
Well, so I think the drivers of Bitcoin, as we've spoken about, have changed with the ETFs and what's happening with the halving. So I think Bitcoin's going to be very well supported. I think the new projects and some of the nascent and emerging projects we look at that really weren't around 2 or 3 years ago, you know, yeah, and the consolidation we're seeing, particularly in the AI space with Fetch and Singularity and others looking to merge, that's a game changer, you know. Obviously, we're bullish because we're in this space, and we very much believe in the technology as well as the fundamentals from the investment side. But I think what, you know, when we're looking at, well, is it time to rotate out of Bitcoin into some of the layer twos or into some of the alts and so on? I think it's more difficult because there's a lot of new tokens. I think that you mentioned something like a couple of thousand tokens being minted just on Solana, you know, on almost a daily basis. So it's hard to separate the wheat from the chaff. But I think the way we built our fund, where we have very much high quality blue chip tokens allocated to around 70% of the capital, and then we look for new opportunities, doing a lot of fundamental research, I think it's inevitable there will be some rotation in, which could be just liquidity and hype. But I think people are really underestimating A, the amount of tech that's coming, sorry, the amount of liquidity, B, the improvement in tech. So it's like there's a huge amount of wall of money, there's a massive improvement in tech, and a different pedigree of investor coming into the space. C, the debasement of currency and geopolitical risk is not getting better, it's getting worse. And that's more concerning for people that don't have assets and obviously aren't involved in the space. And then, you know, the last kind of perspective is that, well, there's so many applications that are still set to come. Like, where the next unicorn is going to come from? The NASDAQ or from, you know, Web3? Like, long term, yeah, I would bet on Web3 100%.
I would agree. So one thing, like, taking a short pivot from what Derek asked, right, is I want to address two vectors that directly impact crypto. One is commodities. And as you know, commodities have long been compared with Bitcoin and Ether and cryptocurrencies. CFTC has ruled in terms of, you know, labeling Bitcoin and Ether as clear direction of why they're commodities. And what we've seen is index of global commodity prices, S&P GSCI, has really exploded 12% this year. Gold has reached all-time high. Copper and oil have gained like 10 to 17% respectively. So you begin to see these things. And I just want to understand, from your overall macro perspective, do we still consider crypto in the same sort of realm as commodity, as an asset class? Or do we now begin to see crypto as a much more broader ecosystem from that perspective? And is there a correlation between the commodities and crypto in general.
Sure. You know, so being South African, we grew up, you know, it's a mining culture. We were very good at digging very deep holes and refining ore and minerals. And gold was like sacrosanct, right? Everyone had Kruger Rands. It was like, but gold to me, there is some, you know, jewelry and some industrial use and so on. But, you know, as soon as you saw prices rise in South Africa, people would bring out gold to recycle. And as soon as prices fell, they would, you know, go back and buy. So I think what I'm getting at is gold to me has always felt more like animal spirits. It's not like something that gets used up like oil or gets cracked like petroleum into all these different chemicals and used like this. It's not really part of the industrial cycle. It is a store of wealth. It is, you know, to some extent, animal spirits and a hedge of inflation. And it does hedge inflation. I think, you know, whatever a suit and a car cost you 20 years ago in terms of the weight of gold would probably be more or less the same today. But what I think is, number one, you know, there's no real applications for gold besides, like I said, jewelry and so on. Whereas in this space, you know, the ecosystem is growing and it's now transversing not just staking and lending and so on, but it's moving into the realms of entertainment, moving into the realms of gaming. It's looking at how consumers, you know, where the next waves are going, how people transact. But also, I think gold is not really transportable. Like, you're part of the system. If you buy gold ETFs, you're kind of still part of the system. It's not like it really belongs to you technically. It's like you're still going through a bank to get on-ramped. You could say the same more or less for crypto, but it's not, because you have a wallet. And when I transfer from my wallet to yours, you own that. It's yours. No one can take it away from you. You don't owe it to anyone. So I think that's the difference. It's transportability. Like, if you know, try take a couple of gold bars across a border and see how easy that is. Whereas, you know, someone says to you, fill in this, like, it's on your phone. It's like, well, it's my wallet. It's digital. And yes, there's the onboarding and off, but at the same time, you can still transact and trade between exchanges and so on. I think in terms of all the commodities I've seen out there, look, the global population is continuing to grow. Emerging markets are continuing to get wealthier, which means that their preferences in terms of whether it's diet going from more carb to protein-based or any of those things, or, you know, they want appliances and cars and energy and all those good things. So I think the demand for commodities is going to continue to be underpinned by that, unless you see a real collapse in population. So, you know, that's the strongest, in my opinion, trend over the longer term that's been held intact, is there's like almost a one-for-one between population growth and demand for iron ore and demand for oil and energy and so on. And we get much better at using it, like way better. Like, we build cars way more efficiently now than we did 30 years ago. But yet we still use it overall as a net number, much more iron ore and steel.
And to that point, just to follow on, Mark, I'm sure you read, this was quite famed last week when Goldman Sachs, which is one of the authorized participants in the Bitcoin ETF and done a number of projects, their CIO of wealth has really sort of discarded Bitcoin crypto as an asset class. And they said, look, it's easy for us to value asset because of, you know, value of stock because of, you know, cash flows and its potential, its innovation, whereas Bitcoin is purely speculative. So I'd love to get you, as our, you know, as CIO of Portal, looking into CIO of, for example, Goldman Wealth. What is your take on that? What's your take on that analysis? And I think the industry has come quite hard on Goldman, given the fact that they have a duality of saying one thing and doing one thing. Is that to appease the regulators? Is that to appease politicians? Whereas you continue doing the stuff exactly what BlackRock has done historically, or JP Morgan has done historically. How do you read into that?
Yeah, I think you said it very well. You know, what Goldman says and what they do are very different. Often, you know, it's, the line is blurred between client and competitor. I think a lot of the big banks will be, you know, and have been traditionally very anti and very much, you know, we remember JP Diamond saying he'd fire people if they invested in crypto inside the bank, and now yet they have all these teams working on it. So I think they know that it's an inevitability that they can't stop. There's always been, and this is something that goes back to when I first saw the dot-com boom, people would say, no, you don't understand. It's different this time. There's a new way to value these companies. You don't value them on cash flow. There's no cash flow. You value them on growth in revenue. You value them on this. I think, you know, every asset class, including fiat currency, is in some ways a narrative. Because, you know, what made you money in the past, you know, might not make you money in the future. And I saw this because, you know, what were the most prominent stocks in the 70s and 80s? Well, it was mining companies. Then it became banks. Then after the 87 crash, it was like, you know, then it was industrials. Then we moved on to to the Microsofts and tech companies. And when they disappeared, the Oracles and all of that, then it became, well, for a while, no one knew, but then it became like social media companies. And it, each time I was like, well, you can't value them based on cash flow because Amazon's not going to make money like forever until it's wiped out all competition. And now all of a sudden it's like printing cash. And it's the same in this space. It's like there's going to be an explosion of ideas. And then it, you see talent come in. And then there's the collapse that we saw. We've seen three now. But there's the collapse in the ICO. And then we saw the collapse after the, you know, NFTs and DeFi, summer of DeFi into 22. And then there's consolidation. And yeah. You know, think about AI and where it is. And then think about the consolidation in this space. And, you know, what does that mean? It's not where it is now. It's not where the ball is now. It's where is it going to be? The difference is, I find in this space, is it moves much quicker. So, you know, what was like really hot 3 months ago is kind of like, you know, so that's one of the things you got to keep on top of. I wouldn't put, and I was speaking to Derek about this yesterday, it was something I've been thinking about for a while, trying to figure out, you know, why has it been difficult for fund managers to allocate to the space? Mm-hmm. So, and the two things that stood out is if you're a listed company or you're a company that you're taking to list, you have an audited, you know, financials and this and that, and then you've got like hundreds of analysts and hundreds of fund managers who have a mandate to do this. And then, you know, and even pension funds and so on can buy into this. So there's like a natural buyer, natural seller. Whereas in this space, there aren't any lists, there aren't any public analysts. Like you've got a guy at Bloomberg's here and there, but you haven't really got teams of analysts at each bank analyzing crypto and putting out a lot of research and saying, buy this token or don't. In fact, when it comes to financial advisors, I think many of them have feared from a reputational point of view to direct their clients. This has been more client directed. So I think that'll change because number one, the opportunities there. Number two, I think when people start understanding the applications, when they see real cash flow being generated from the likes of ETH and others, where there's real payouts, it's almost like, well, now you can start looking at traditional valuation measures. But I would also say that, you know, the final topic on it, the final point is, your asset allocation decision from the top down drives your returns for the most part. You know, stock picking and the rest of it, that adds a lot of value, but your asset allocation decision drives returns. And on, if I look back on a 1, 3, 5, 7 and 10 year view, it's the best performing asset class. So if you haven't had allocation to it, like you should go and explain to your clients why not. And Goldman should do that too, especially if they were the guys betting on the subprime market going down while selling their companies the subprime.
That's right. Well, if I can, as Nitin says, can I double click on a couple of those things? So here in Australia, the wealth managers, which is kind of an upmarket term for financial planners, but that includes the financial planners, the wealth managers are not allowed to recommend digital assets, digital asset funds, or even the BTC ETF. And when you ask them why they're not allowed to recommend that, they say our insurance has a carve out to say we're not even insured to make recommendations in this sector. So that gives you an indication of how early stage this sector is and what lack of knowledge the traditional equity analysts, insurance companies, wealth managers have on it. They lack so much knowledge that they're just frightened of it because they can't transfer their equity analysis across to this space and make head nor tail of it. So their answer to it is don't go there. And of course, also we assume that their answer is that this is also a threat to what they're traditionally used to and what they're comfortable narrating. So these sort of things have an impact, and they have in some ways, an extraordinary statement for the future. And that is, if you've got masses of wealth managers that aren't allowed to advise their high net worth individuals to invest in this space, then that space hasn't arrived yet. And you're seeing that lack of knowledge across the world. We've often used that terminology of, you know, many times, of me getting my pilot's license, going solo at 11 and a bit hours, and asking why the 16-year-old kid went solo at 8 hours. And the answer in reply to that was, he wasn't looking for the brake, the clutch, or the accelerator. And I was when I was flying the airplane, and you don't need an accelerator, brake, or clutch in an aircraft. And this is what the equity guys tend to do. They come across to this space with a whole list of things that they've had 25 years experience in. They hold it up and it doesn't fit. And if it doesn't fit, it must be broken. And the answer to that is, of course, we all know it's not broken. It's just different. And so I think they'll arrive progressively as we go. And I'd like to make one other thought, and that is, if you look at the total capitalization of gold at the moment, it's about $14 trillion. And various estimates on the net put the total global investable assets at about $280 trillion. Well, that's a lovely round number for us. So that estimates that gold is worth about 5% of the entire investment sort of horizon, so to speak. Yet in this place, in this space, gold, Bitcoin, is worth 52% of the market. Do you see that showing a light that the rest of this market, the digital industry, is going to grow substantially? Not that gold's going to drop, Bitcoin's going to drop in price, but the rest of this alt market is going to grow substantially, to see over the next 3, 4, 5, 7 years that in fact Bitcoin will end up being worth maybe 5 or 10% of the capitalization of the market as the industry builds out. Interested in your thoughts, both of you, on that.
Okay, well, I think like I was saying a little bit earlier, I think the fact that there's so many new applications that are being thought of and projects being developed, I think that yes, not only will the crypto market in general, market cap, I won't just catch up, I believe it'll exceed gold. I believe there'll be a massive, it won't be like this transfer of wealth, it'll just be a shift, you know, when companies are looking to raise capital, you know, how will they go about doing that and so on. And I think this, as the space becomes embraced and people start building other projects in Web3, when people start realizing the potential, I do believe that overall Bitcoin, the numbers that I've been looking at from a liquidity point of view, just from an ETF point of view, give me a much higher upside, as same as for ETH. But yeah, I think that it's difficult to compare it to some of the other asset classes which have a different utility, particularly real estate and so on. But I do think that inflation or the deflationary effect of monetary, bad money policy, you know, printing of money, is going to, you know, continue to fuel this need for a way to keep up with inflation. And it's kind of like, you know, the number that I've heard bandied about now, particularly if in the equity space, is the real cost of living. It's not 5%, it's 15. That's your hurdle now. And equities have given you that over the past 5 years, but that's your kind of hurdle now to stand still, not to generate wealth. And younger people don't have assets, so they got to figure out, how do I generate wealth?
That's right.
There's not many gains in time. Like, no one starting out in a job earning even $100,000 a year can afford an apartment or a property pretty much anywhere in the Western world at this point in time. So what are your other options? You know, what would you invest in? Most people don't want to hold diamonds and gold and store it in their home. They don't want to sit in cash. You can put some money to work in the equity space, but you know, this space starts looking like a very viable alternative. And just the last thing I'd say is, going back to your point on financial planners and registered investment advisors, it's like that space has been unfortunately so overregulated now, where it's become more of a, it's actually no longer really a financial decision. It's no longer a financial planning process. It's a, like, sort of cover your backside with paperwork, kind of make sure everything is in the right place process, and like just allocate to funds. And once they've got their 5 funds, they generally don't look outside the box. They spend all their time making sure filing's up to date. So I feel that many people that are generating wealth from an entrepreneurial perspective are not really getting proper advice anymore as to how to allocate your capital, so to generate wealth for yourself, intergenerational wealth for yourself, your children, and so on. And crypto doesn't need to be the biggest portion of that. But if you haven't got a 2, 3, or 4% allocation to crypto, like, you know, just take a look at what it would have done for your fund. It's not me making it up. It's not an opinion. It's a fact. Go back and look at the numbers and look at what it would have done if you'd bought crypto. I mean, if you were lucky enough not that long ago to buy crypto at the last halving, which was in July 2016, it was sub $1,000. 1% of your funding there would have now been worth 60. That's what it was.
That's fine. So my perspective on this, you know, Derek, is spot on with what, you know, what Mark described. To me, I add another vector to it, you know, which is demographics. The nature of work is changing. There's a globalization of all the technical input that goes into, again, things like what AI is driving is truly creating global workforce. I mean, we have discussed in this podcast that we view Bitcoin and Ethereum like ecosystems, are truly global nation state status, where they are trying to attract capital, attract talent. And so while the newer generation understands and have the quest to invest in this ecosystem, either as an avenue to generate wealth or as an avenue for them to be able to monetize this by bringing their skill set without actually having a traditional job, for example, I think that's a primary driver, as you'll see a lot of youth and a lot of younger generation moving to this asset class and realizing the value, not purely from a store of value perspective, but also from a perspective of the ability to monetize the space. Second thing I would add to what Mark mentioned, which is going over towards global macro elements, is the masses. So today, Bitcoin represents about $1 trillion worth of market cap. There have been at least, I would say, 30 layer two projects, close to 40 to 45, all have sprung up in the last, I would say, 3 months, that are aiming to move liquidity from one ecosystem, which is Bitcoin ecosystem, to Ethereum DeFi ecosystem. So there's a whole hyper-financialization of not just Bitcoin as a massive market cap that it represents to the industry, but also ability for them to expose them to financial innovation that actually was only confined to smart contract, things like Solana and things like, you know, Ethereum per se, which I think is a positive thing for the crypto industry in general, because now you have true utilization of capital, which is today trapped in Bitcoin ecosystem per se. So I think some of these only has an avenue to grow only because now you have more capital coming into the ecosystem, and more capital drives more innovation, drives more returns, drives more expectation from that perspective. So I'll pause here, Derek, to see if that made sense in addition to what Mark mentioned in overall perspectives as the financial ecosystem moves around the world.
Yeah. Look, thank you very much for both of you for having, you know, these inputs for the month of March. You know, what we've seen, as Mark has said, is it's been an interesting choppy month of, you know, a fairly decent pullback of nearly 20% over that period of time, and then it ended up finishing quite solidly. Our funds have performed well by the end of the month for both the Portal Digital Fund and the Radiance Fund, which has been excellent. And you know, this navigation of this process of investment does greatly engage both a view of the future, and that is, you know, what percentage should Bitcoin ultimately be in this space? How does AI, Internet of Things devices, and the stacks of technology see this industry grow substantially, whilst at the same time looking over our shoulder and considering what is the inflationary position of markets and why would people have deployment here? It's such a fascinating confluence of determinants that make this market move forward. So much so that we're going to be bringing you on every month, if we may, Mark, so that you can continue to do this cross-section between traditional and digital assets and talk about the marketplace. Thank you so much for joining us this month, Mark, and great to see you as always, Nitin.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Thanks, Mark. That was great. Thanks. I really enjoyed the chat.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, Nitin. It was really good. Really good catching up. Keen to carry on. I'm happy to talk every month. I think the macro is the macro, and I don't think it's definitely only. It's deteriorating for the real world, but improving for crypto, if that makes sense.
True. That's true.
Nice way of putting it. Exactly.
Great way to wrap
it up. We'll see more of that next week, because next week, Nitin and I are together again, and this time in Dubai for Token 2049. So we'll bring you our sense of what's happening at Token 2049 on Dubai next week. We'll see you all there. Bye for now.
Bye, guys.
We hope you enjoyed our weekly conversation. If you have any questions, comments, or suggested topics, please contact Nitin Gaur or myself on the emails displayed here or via our LinkedIn profiles. Feel free to subscribe and share with like-minded friends. Stay well, inquisitive, and engaged. See you next week.